This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking. And the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Hello and welcome to the Gone to the Dogs podcast. Steve Fielder with you. My pleasure today to talk to my longtime friend from down in, or up as my case may be, in the state of Alabama, And this guy here has been on the podcast many times, but we got some things to talk about today and wanted to share with you. If I can keep him off the fishing ponds and all that other stuff that he does for a young man his age. Anyway, Nubbin Moore from Sterrett, Alabama. How are you doing today, Nub?
Man, I'm good. Doing just fine.
Oh, that's good. It's always good to hear your voice. And had a few conversations with some of your friends here lately and something we want to talk about here in just a minute. But you and I have traveled quite a few miles together and had a lot of fun over the years and hope that there's many, many more for our listeners. If we get to talking about the good old days and talking about what it's like to be old men and all, they'll just have to bear with us, won't they?
That's right. You know, I don't consider myself old like a lot of folks do, but that's what it is, 84. I don't know how I got this old so quick, but anyway, that's the way it goes.
My dad used to say if he knew he was going to get this old, he'd have taken better care of himself.
Yeah, I've said that too.
Yeah. By talking the other day to our mutual friend Kenwood Maker, and Kenwood's 87.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, well, age is just in your mind. If you don't feel old, you're not old, you know, and I think that's pretty much true.
That's right. Age is just a number, Steve.
Yeah. Well, our bodies remind us, but our minds, except for being a little forgetful at times.
It just gets worse.
Tell me about that, man. Lately, I have had trouble, you know, remember names, you know, names, face will pop up and I'll say, no, what's that guy's? I was looking on Facebook, which I spend more time scrolling that thing than I should. It's absolutely a waste of time. And the worst thing that ever happened to this country and our generation, I believe, but I do it anyway, out of habit. And I was looking at that old country gospel, whatever group called the Oak Ridge Boys.
Yeah.
I was looking at their pictures and stuff, and they have not aged well. I first saw those guys in Lakeland, Florida when I was college here in the 60s. And they had all this black hair, looked like Elvis impersonators, you know, and all that. But I couldn't and I've met this guy, talked to him personally and all, and this is the lead singer for the Oak Ridge Boys, and his first name is Dwayne. And I was thinking and thinking and thinking, and for the life of me, I could not remember his last name. And I had to look it up. I had to Google. So Google is good for old folks, you know, when you can't remember something. But anyway, his name is Dwayne Allen.
That's called CRS, Steve.
That's right. And I got it big time now. Yeah. But
you know, the Oak Ridge Boys, my wife Becky, years ago, went to Mississippi to the Sheriff's Boys Ranch to be a house parent. And the Oak Ridge Boys came there and stayed a day or two, put on a concert.
How about that?
And then they built a house and paid for it on that farm. And Becky stayed over, I don't know, 4 or 5 years like that, and was house parents over there. Oh. But the Oak Ridge Boys came there. So she got to meet them and sat down and talked to them years ago. That was back in the, I think around 1980, something like that.
Yeah. Well, when I was a young buck, you know, and in high school and went to college and stuff, I enjoyed Southern gospel music. And every time I would get a chance, I'd go to a concert if it was one nearby. And my brother played drums with a group. They weren't big time. You know, they weren't Division One, as you would say in sports. Mm-hmm. But they traveled all up and down the East Coast. And they'd be, you know, open up for these bigger groups, you know. And so I met a lot of those guys, you know, over the years, and seemed like pretty good guys, but those fellows are still out there doing it, you know, and I know they're probably older, as old anyway as we are, maybe older.
I'm sure they are.
But anyway, I guess it's what, you know, if there's a will, you always used to say, if there's a will, there's a relative. But
yeah, that's right.
There, you know, you find a way if it's something you enjoy doing. And that's kind of the way we are with our coon hunting, I think. We're going to try to find a way if we can.
I told my buddy Jamie Perrin the other day, I said, Jamie, I put my light on charge and I'm ready to go hunting. But here it is again Friday, and we hadn't been this week, so
well,
that's okay.
You have to. You don't want to waste that electricity now, you know.
Well,
you know, the old folks back when my grandma was living, and my grandmother Hatfield, she was a Goble, but she married a Hatfield out of that feud and Hatfield bunch in Kentucky and West Virginia. They never would admit it, but that's where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, she didn't want you to use that juice. Turn that light off. You're wasting
that's right,
the juice.
Cut them lights off. That's where my daddy used to be. He'd come along behind us cutting lights off.
That's right. They say that when they first came out with the electric lights and stuff in homes, people thought if you didn't leave a light bulb in there, the electricity would run out in the room.
I never heard that one.
Oh, I heard that one. Yeah. So you got to keep a light bulb in that socket. You know?
That's right. That juice will get out.
Absolutely. Well, we got a few things to talk about. You've been fishing some.
I hadn't been since yesterday.
Oh, okay.
Me and my buddy Jerry Lewis. We went across the road yesterday, and I think we kept 17 bass.
Mm. Is that over the limit? No, I don't know. I don't want to get the game department here on you.
No, that's I don't know what the limit is. I don't worry about the other one. But anyway, I normally don't keep them all, but I'm keeping fish now, and we're going to have a fish fry at the church for a fundraiser.
And, that's a good idea.
Some kids are going to Trinidad on a mission trip, so we need to make a little money and send them on their way here in a couple of months. So
yeah, that's one reason I'm keeping them right now. Bring you back a bongo drum, and we'll play it when we go to White River. They play those bongo drums and kettle drums and all that stuff down there in Trinidad.
Yeah, that's right. I guess they do. I don't know what to. I've never been to Trinidad.
Have you been to the Caribbean?
I've been to the Caribbean, and I've been down in the islands. When I was in the Navy, I saw the world through a porthole, you know.
Yeah.
I went all down the East Coast and down in the Caribbean, went to the Mediterranean Sea two different times. When I was in the Navy, that was a long time ago. I went in the Navy in 1960, and I got out in 64, so that was 4 years I gave Uncle Sam.
Yeah. My dad.
And I enjoyed every minute of it. A lot of them guys was in there, and they was griping and complaining about it. And, you know, I looked at it this way. I signed up for 4 years, make the best out of it.
That's right. Absolutely.
And I tried to do that. I just always seemed to be happy and tried to do what I could, make the day go good, and just let her rip. That's all I've ever done.
That's right.
And I still feel that way, you know.
Yeah.
I refuse bad days. You don't have to take them, you know.
That's a great philosophy, buddy. Mm-hmm. It definitely is, and it's all about our attitude, really. We look at things. You know, I look at so many people in the news today, and they're crying and moaning and groaning. It's the worst life they could ever possibly have, and people got more today than any generation in our history.
That's right.
You know, these
hey,
kids.
I don't have any complaints. My health is still good. And, you know, I got a wife that takes care of them and helped me through life. And I've got kids and grandkids and great-grandkids. And one of my grandsons called me day before yesterday, and they're going to have another one. It's going to be in, I believe he said October, November, going to have another girl.
That's a bad time to have a baby, right in the middle of hunting season. You know, I didn't think about that. You don't think about that.
No.
But that's why my boy was born about the 11th of November. No, yeah. The 18th. Mm-hmm. I better straighten this out or he'll be after me. The 8th of November is when mm-hmm. he was born, and that's right in hunting season. You know, I remember being told he was on the way. I said, no, that's when bear season starts in West Virginia.
It don't matter. Once you plant that seed, it's coming out in 9 months. Some of them come early.
That's right. You're talking about seeing the world through a porthole. My dad was full of these old, they call them dad jokes now. But, yeah. You know, corny jokes and all. And he said there was a guy in the Navy, and he was out there on the deck with a mop, and the CO or whatever, the chief petty officer, come by and said, "What are you doing there, seaman?" He said, "I'm mopping the floor." He said, "That's not a floor. That's a deck." And if
right.
I hear you call that say that again, I'm going to throw you through that little round window.
I don't think he'd fit through that little round window.
Yeah, but he got his terminology only went so far. He forgot about porthole. Anyway, a joke's not good if you got to explain it. So there,
that's right.
That's a dad joke for sure.
Yeah.
And my dad had a lot of them, and I miss them. I really do. And I think, you know, that's the thing is we see members or friends, especially in the coon hunting world, that are passing on now at an alarming rate. I wasn't going to get into this quite yet, but I think we probably ought to go ahead and talk about it. Now, just last weekend, from the time we're recording this, we're recording on May 9th, and this will air on Monday, the 12th of May. But the weekend prior to this was Black and Tan Days in Flora, Illinois. And one of the things that they had there at Black and Tan Days that I would have personally liked to have attended was a Chirpy Birdsall Memorial Bench Show.
That's right.
And Chirpy was just an icon in the black and tan breed. And I believe she served as the secretary of the association at one time or another.
Anyway, she'd been in there for years. I used to go to Black and Tan Days every year, and she was always there. She showed up at the Winter Classic and all the big hunts. They loved
her.
Her and Doc loved them show dogs, them black and tan show dogs.
Oh, yeah, and they had some great ones over the years. Uh-huh. And their daughter, Kathy, came along, and she picked up the showing. And
right.
I never did see Doc show much, but he has judged a lot of the major shows.
Oh, yeah, he was there. You know, he was there just rooting them on most of the time,
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because this last Autumn Oaks, you and I didn't get to go together this last year, but hopefully we will this year. I sure hope so. But one of the things I was determined to do was to get over to the show barn and see Doc and Chirpy, because I remember Chirpy from the days of plot days when they came, and I guess they were showing their dogs maybe in the show there. But Chirpy had a great black and tan that she called Roscoe. And old Roscoe was a big old stout thing, and they had a treeing contest out there. Well, they called out Roscoe, and here come this little old gals, we'd say back home she wouldn't weigh 50 pounds soaking wet, you know. Came out of the crowd, this big old black dog, literally dragging her, you know, into the ring. And she had knee boots on and her hunting clothes and stuff, you know. And that was my first experience with Chirpy. And we laughed about that many times in our conversations and all. And she's just such a shining star in our sport.
Oh, yeah, she was.
Yeah.
You know, I bred to one of their show dogs one time, a female out of my dogs.
Oh, you did, huh?
Yeah, I wanted to get a better looking hound, you know, and I thought, well, if I breed him, then they'll be better looking. But they was houndy looking dogs back then, but mm-hmm. it didn't turn out like I planned, so.
That's a lot of time. Now, Doc used those dogs for years for deer.
Oh, yeah. He ran deer with dogs.
Yeah, and I can imagine what a good-sounding deer race that would be to have a bunch of those big black Dans running that thing. Man, I always did like a good mouth on a dog, didn't you? I like them with a good mouth.
Oh, yeah. I like big mouth dog. And if I have a dog, it's got to be a good tree dog, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, that would be my thing with that deer hunting or fox hunting or even when I had beagles. You know, I remember one time I was in Virginia and had gone down there. We were building clubs for UKC and I was down there and listening to this boy's dogs run a rabbit one morning and this dog got treed up on the ridge. And, man, I left that rabbit race and went up there to see what that cur dog had up that tree. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, that's just that I remember as a boy going fox hunting with my dad's friends in Tennessee. And going, I'd listen for a while, and I enjoyed it, you know. But I kept waiting for him to tree, and it never did happen. But anyway, they did have that Chirpy Bird Soul show, and I think it was well attended, and that was a great thing to do to attribute to Chirpy. She was just such a warm personality. She spoke with that Eastern Virginia. Southern
did.
Accent, you know, things were just marvelous, you know.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
just marvelous, you'd say.
Yeah.
I loved her to death. I can't hardly talk about her without tearing up, but she left that impression all over the country. Anybody that met her, and it gets back to what you said earlier, Nubbin, it's about our attitude of life, you know,
mm-hmm.
how
it
we
is.
Look at things and how we see people and all, and I don't know, but that's just one of the benefits of this game is to be able to meet some really, really nice people. Now, the other day, I got a phone call. And the voice on the other end of the line was our mutual friend, Gary Hayes. We call him Frog.
That's right.
And Frog was on his way home from Black and Tan days. And he was with another mutual friend and Black and Tan diehard, Mike Crockett.
Right.
Frog and Mike both from, I guess their address is Senatobia. Mississippi.
Yeah, they are.
And, of course, you introduced me to Frog and Mike Nubbin when we stopped by Mike's place. He's always been a gracious host to us. Just come on in, boys, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The beds are down the hallway there.
Yeah.
Now, don't expect Crockett to get up and cook you a big breakfast or anything. but
hey, he'll furnish you a place to eat. Or sleep.
You can cook.
We have to go off to eat
because
Mike lives by himself and he ain't the best cook in the world and he don't cook that much.
But what
you know, the door's always open.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
And if I go by there, if I was to leave today, I wouldn't even have to call him. I'd just go on in when I got there and make myself at home, and that's just the way he's been for years.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, think about living life like that, you know, just enjoy it. No hassles, no worries. Well, I'm sure he's got worries. He has a business. He builds welds these fences out of tubing.
Well, he's slowed down a lot on that lately. Of course, Mike's getting on up there, too.
Yeah, and, he's been a cowboy.
He's got cows and he farms and, you know. Cuts hay and all that kind of stuff. He's busy out. And Frog's boy, Easton, he turned 16 this year.
And shot up like a weed. Have you seen him lately?
Oh, yeah. I've just seen pictures of him. I hadn't seen him.
He was always the least little dude.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
but he's growing. He's, He's growing. I told Frog the other day, I said, he'll be getting his driver's license before long. But of course, he's been driving tractors on the farm for Mike since he's 10, 11 years old. So,
yeah.
You know, I said, you make sure that kid knows how to drive good, because a lot of these kids around here, when they get their license, first thing you know, they've had a wreck.
Yeah.
So that they think they can drive, but they really can't, you know.
Well, that's the unfortunate thing about a lot, and I've seen this over the years with these ball players.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they make all that money, and the first thing they do is go out and buy a car. It'll go 200 miles an hour.
Oh, yeah.
And before you know it, they've wrapped it up against the bridge abutment somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny. When my son started driving, I'd take him out to high school parking lot, and the first time or two, I said, this is going to be a challenge here. But I thought, now, he's going to want a car. And of course, buying him a new car was out of the question. But I said, I want to get something that'll he'll be as safe as he can be with it, you know. Something big, something substantial, you know, because he's bound to run into something. So I bought him an old Mercury Sable four-door sedan. And, of course, that wasn't really what a teenager wanted, but he was glad just to have wheels, you know. But one of the first things he did on the icy roads up there in Michigan, he spun it on the highway and ran into one of these concrete bridge abutments and popped the windshield out of it. So I knew that was coming, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And the next time he was taking his date home, and he dodged a couple of raccoons that ran out in front of him. He dodged and took it down over the hill. And the girl's dad called me and said he put it right, the only place he could have put it, and not hit a tree. So anyway, yeah, having teenage drivers can try.
Well, I was fortunate enough when both of my children come along, Scott and Pam, then I belong to a hunting club, so plenty of old dirt roads and woods roads, logging roads. So that's where I would take them to learn to drive. And they'd just drive all over that club, you know, and on them dirt roads and logging roads, and learn how to drive. And both of them learned how and done real good driving, both of them have.
Well, that was the thing with me. You know, when I was a kid, we had all those strip mines around southern West Virginia, and we'd go coon hunting. My dad'd say, oh, here, get over here under the wheel, as they called it. And he'd be talking to me, you know, always teaching me. Said, now, don't look right down over the hood right there in front. Look way up. Look ahead. Keep your eyes up what's in front of you, you know. always. What wonderful memories. Great times. But I'm sure that anybody that's had kids learning to drive, it's a traumatic time for them. Yeah. But getting back to this phone call from Mike and Frog, on the way back home from Black and Tan Days with the news that there's a new lifetime member for the American Black and Tan Association, and that member was none other than Nubbin Moore.
That's right. I got the same call.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah. I was surprised by it, but, you know, I'm sure there's a lot more black and tan people out there more deserving than I am. But, you know, that's life, I guess. You know, Mike and Frog has always been good friends of mine. Of course, when I worked in Memphis for 6 years, I got to know Mike, and down the edge of Mississippi through Fred Sanders. And, you know, Mike's always been a good friend. If I called him right now and told him, Mike, I need you to come over here, then he'd start on his way.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know.
Absolutely.
You know,
you can't
say that about many of your friends. Some of them haul around, make excuses. I can't come today. I can come next week.
Yeah.
You know, but I believe if I call Mike, he'd say, let me get this stuff put up. Let me get the tractor put in the shed, and I'll be coming that way.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, in life, you don't have many friends like that. You know, you have acquaintances and you have people that, you know, they think a lot of you, but they're not really true friends.
Well, I always heard that to have friends, you have to be a friend. And I certainly don't know, and I'm not trying to blow smoke up your butt, but I don't know anybody that has more friends and is more friendly and with a, you know, a good attitude toward their friends than you. And I don't know if mama taught you that or daddy taught you that, or that's just the way you were. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about this lifetime membership. Now, in the Black and Tan Association, unlike my breed association, which is the National Plothound Association, in our association, if you're a member for 10 years and you're reached 65 years of age, that you become a lifetime member. But in the Black and Tans, it's an honor that, and you have to be voted in, right?
Every year they have an annual meeting every year. And it's that meeting, they bring up the business for the association. And that's one thing. You know, somebody nominates somebody, and they could be several nominated. And then the members at the meeting vote on who's going to be a lifetime member for that year.
Well, you were talking earlier, and you said, well, there's a lot of people that's probably more deserving and so forth. But really, when you think about it, Nubbin, you've done as much with the Black and Tan Dog as anybody. I mean, you haven't won a world hunt like Jeff Nelson did in South Boston, Virginia, when I was with UKC with Old Northern Buck, too. Mm-hmm. But you did win Autumn Oaks overall on the 25th anniversary, and that's a bigger hunt than the world hunt.
Oh, yeah, it was.
And you also were high scoring. And we've talked about this before, but you know, that Sanders Hank was a good dog for you, and you put him out there and for the public to look at him, and he won a lot, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, he won a lot. And, you know, one thing, I didn't get to hunt in the UKC World Hunt because I was a field rep then. And you guys, you and Fred wouldn't let me hunt in it. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, several times I was on the cast with the final four. And I thought, man, I wish my dog was here.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, but I did win a lot with him. I won Alabama State 100 times, won that Autumn Oaks, and I was high scoring Black and Tan 3 years in a row there. And been to Winter Classic, high scoring Black and Tan there. So I did win a lot. He was a good dog. I tell folks now, I lost a lot of sleep on account of that dog. Because when you turned him loose, he'd go hunting and you had to go get him. Yeah. There wasn't no coming back and wasn't no calling. You know, back then we didn't have tracking collars to make them come back and shocking collars. But anyway.
Well,
he
you
was a good dog.
Yeah, go ahead.
But he was one thing about him, if he located a tree, you could tree him because 99 times out of 100, he was there. Mm-hmm. You know, if he located, he right or wrong, he was going to stay treed. So I've been walking with the whole castle, walking wide open, trying to get close, and I'd hear him locate, and I'd tree him while we were walking, you know, because... You know, back then, dogs packed a whole lot. They don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So if you're going to win a hunt, you got to get first tree. And I got a lot of them back then, but that's a long time ago, Steve.
Well, that's knowing your dog, you know, and that's when that was so important. And, you know, and I watched the videos, and I've said this before, and I don't want to, you know, be a Debbie Downer, and I'm glad these guys are able to do what they're doing and have the legs and the heart to do it and all that. But it's an entirely different ball game today.
It is.
You did really have to be on your, as Mama would say, P's and Q's. when you were out there on a night hunt, you had to be listening every second, you know.
That's right.
Told a joke about, well, it's not a joke, a story about Dave Dean in Michigan, the blue tick man, that he collapsed on the hunt, and he was laying on the ground, and they were trying to, you know, I don't know if they were doing CPR on him or whatever, trying to get him to come back around, and he was laying there flat on his back, and he said, "Tree hammer."
Yeah.
Of course, all his were named Hammer. I think.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how many.
He had 20 hammers.
I heard another old dad joke of guys. Yeah. He said, had a bunch of dogs around the place there. And he called him and said, "What's that one's name?" And he said, "Shorty." He said, "What's about that?" And over there, that's Shorty. He said, "Well, you mean all of them's named Shorty?" He said, "Yeah, when I say Shorty, I want them all to come." Yeah. Oh, me. Well, you had a dog named Zach.
I had a dog named Zach. He won Black and Tan King of the Hunt in 1990 at Black and Tan Days. And Zach was probably the best pure tree dog, what I call a pure tree dog. That now he was a decent dog, and he won a lot. But you know, he was probably the best tree, black and tan tree dog I ever had. You know, just bark 120 times a minute, and never shut up.
And, oh boy! Well, what was old Zach out of? Do you remember?
Zach was out of. You gonna make me lie now? Mm-hmm. I got to think he come out of Mike Crockett's dogs. I know that.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure he had a dog, and I forgot the dog's name now. But he come from Mike Crockett's house. Mm-hmm. That's where he come from.
Mike had some interesting names for some of his dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Hickahaley.
I'm pretty sure since you called his name, Zach was out of Hickahaley.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. And, you know, CRS kicked in. We was talking about that a while ago.
Oh, yeah. That's my friend, my closest friend. And it's an excuse. You know, I say, well, my
but
CRS
I've had some pretty good black dogs over the years.
Well, now, do you see? I mean, I know that you're an humble fella and you don't ever brag on your dogs, but you can kind of see why those people thought that it would be a good idea to make you a lifetime member. And at the same time, when you pair that with who Nubbin Moore is, and there again, I'm bragging on you, but everybody knows Nubbin Moore because Nubbin Moore is a friendly guy. And he's a guy that people like to talk to. And so anyway, that all goes together. And that's a lesson for the young people maybe listening to this. If you want to make your mark in the coonhound world, you're not going to make it by being I'll just use the word, a butthole out there every time you go to the woods. I mean, you may think that you're achieving something, but you'll be long gone, you know. And nobody will remember you. They won't remember that dog or whatever, but they will remember you as the man that, you know, was a good friend and a good hunter.
When we're competition hunting, we all try to win, and we use the rules, and sometimes we bend them. And you know, in our favor, or try to, but you try to do right. But you know, I've had folks tell me that I cheated them, and what he was talking about, his dog located and went to treeing. He didn't tree his dog. Mine come running in there and give a locate, and I treed him. He said, "You stole my tree." I said, "No, you just sprayed to call your dog." And it's a competition between the handler and the dog, not just the dog all the way and not just the handler all the way.
That's right. Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't cheat him. He just didn't call his dog.
That's absolutely right. You got to be ready. You got to know the dog. That's the way the game's played. The
That's
old
right.
kid, Kenny Rogers said, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them, you know.
That's right.
And you got to be on your toes. And that's what always made competition hunting such fun for me. Now the guys, it's just, you know, it's a different game. It's not, you're really not. Yeah, maybe I better rephrase that. It doesn't seem to me like that you're really competing against the other dog so much, except that your dog, just how quick can your dog be to get that coon in the tree? Mm-hmm. And regardless, the other dogs don't matter. You know, it gets down to the wire. Yeah, you're concerned whether that other dog over there's got that coon that's going to beat you. You know, but there's nothing you can do about that. Your dog's not on that tree. Your dog's a quarter mile the other direction, you know. So, but it used to be, it really did matter how many points you had and how quick you could call and get those points on the board. And, of course, you know, the old term pitching your dog came along. Well, that was a guy that just called his dog when his dog wasn't there, wasn't barking, mm-hmm. wasn't treed. And that's always been cheating, you know. But the good handlers back in the day, you know, just like you mentioned in that case right there, they listened to the other dogs and they determined that that dog was treed and they knew that. Well, when their dog came in and gave a half a tree bark, they knew that he's going to mm-hmm. be treed too. And so they went ahead and took the tree if the other guy didn't take it. And that was all perfectly fine. That's the way the game was played, you know. But
yep, that's right.
But you don't see the guys now, you know, they've got all the time in the world, really. If the clock's winding down, they need a coon to win, you know, they're going to be pretty quick about calling their dog so they can get the clock started. And they get on the way to the tree. They only have to stay 3 minutes now. You know, it didn't used to be that way. But mm-hmm. yeah. Well, so you did. You definitely did make your mark on the black and tan breed, and you didn't do it in the backyard. You did it, you know, at the bigger hunts. So good for you.
Yep.
Now, they gave you, a plaque. Have you received that yet?
No, I won't get that till next year when I go to Black and Tan Days and accept that award, you know.
I see.
And, you know, you get voted in this year. Next year, you actually get it.
I see. You know? Well, that's given recognition where recognition is due, uh-huh. or as the UKC papers have used to say for years, honor to whom honor is due. Uh-huh. And yeah. I've always thought this is a recognition game. You know, the reason we do it is the recognition we get from our peers, you know, and anybody that says they don't enjoy going to a hunt and when it's time to start calling out the names and the high scoring dog and you can walk up there and get that trophy there, they'll say, well, that's just plastic and wood. But no, it's the recognition, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when I won Autumn Oaks in 84, that's the first big hunt, other than hunting here in Alabama, that I'd ever went to. And when they didn't call out my name, usually they call out the black and tans first, and then they went to call them others. I thought, man, did they forget me? You know, they waited the last to call my name, you know. And
well, I'll go back there, up a little bit, and you said Fred Miller and I wouldn't let you hunt. I didn't have anything to do with that. I wanted to hunt just as much as you did. I didn't get to hunt either. That was Fred's policy. He thought it was a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
You know, if we were making the decisions and all, you know, that we couldn't be part of it, it would look like.
Oh, I know.
You know,
hey, I understand that, and I go along with that. I think that's the way it ought to be, but. You know,
well, UKC.
At that time, I wanted to hunt.
Oh yeah,
but you know, but by the rules, I couldn't hunt. So
one of the things
and that was okay
made me question whether I'd made the right decision or not by going to UKC. Is when I started going to the hunts, and everybody was leaving the grounds, loading their dogs, got their lights on, and everything, and I'm sitting there, you know. And I said, man, I want to go to the woods. And in the early days, I did walk along with a lot of casts, you know. And I saw a lot of good dogs go that way, you know. But it's not the same as hunting your own dog, you know.
Yeah, I remember one time, old Todd Kellum, which I don't know what hunt we were at. He wanted to go. He wanted to go on my calf because he wanted to see what my dog looked like. And I wish he hadn't went because the dog looked like crap all night. You know, I don't know. I don't remember everything that happened, but I apologize to Kellum lately. I said, man, you wanted to see what a dog looked like. You didn't see nothing tonight. But dogs have bad nights just like we do, you know.
That's just the thing. And, I've got a young dog here that needs to be in the woods, and he's going. I'm taking him next week up to Mark Miller's. I wanted to take him on up to northern Ohio to Clayton Starks, and I will in time. But I'm not sure he's ready for that yet because – just like everybody, what we're talking about, you want the dog to look good. If I take him to Clayton, Clayton's going to do videos, and he's a stand-up, straight-up guy, one of the finest fellows I've met in this sport. And he's going to tell it just like exactly like it is on my pup, you know. So the pup's really just lightly started. He hasn't had much of a chance down here at all since I got back from White River. So I want him to be, you know, doing something, doing it pretty good before I put him, you know, out there for people to look at. And I think that's just natural for us. Yeah. You know, we want him to do as well as he can.
Mark will get him started. He'll put him in the woods. And that's what he needs.
Yeah, exactly. Mark is a hunter. You know, I can vouch. And if anybody doubts that, I can show you the videos because I'm getting them just about every night. He told me the other night, this is funny, he'd hunted, I think, two nights. And this second night, he's got a little female named Lucy, and she really goes hunting good. He gives Fever a night off, and he takes the young dogs. He's got his buddy's pup out of Fever, named Rip, and he's got this Lucy female that's not related to Fever, but she's a young dog, and he's getting her going, and she had covered like about 3 miles, I think, or something. Those dogs, he's in the mountains, and those dogs hunt. They don't stand around under your feet, and when you go to them, you know, a lot of times you're going pretty much straight up. But anyway, he said after two nights of hunting, he said it was Wednesday night come along, and he said, I was sitting there in the bathroom. I was sitting on the throne. He said, almost fell out in the middle of the floor, gone to sleep. So he said, it's about time for me to take a night off, I think, you know. So, but yeah, he's a good hunter. Mark is a good hunter for sure.
I used to hunt in them mountains around here, but, man, I like the flatland anymore.
Oh, yeah.
If you're going to go to the mountains, I'm going to sit in the truck.
Yeah, I guess that's why we like the White River so much. Yeah. We don't have to worry about hills. And that's about as flat a place as I've ever seen.
It is flat. It is.
Well.
And it won't be long. We'll need to start planning on going again.
That's right, you know, and this is one of the things that, you know, I wanted to kind of talk with you about, and that's that every year you and I seems like more frequently than we did the year before, we talk about, well, is this going to be our last year? Is this going to be the year that we hang it up, you know? That was inconceivable to us when we were 50 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Or even 60 years old. You know, we didn't think we'd ever quit, you know. But Mother Nature is not kind to us in terms of, you know, if I had better hunting down here, I'd hunt a lot more. I know that. But, you know, when you get my age, I'm 5 years younger than you. You know, you have to realize that the end is in sight. You know,
oh, yeah.
Do you think about that much?
Well, it is, and just like I was telling somebody the other day, I've got a decent dog now. It needs to be hunted. She hadn't been hunted lately, but she'll be 10 years old this fall. Mm-hmm. So at some time, you know, you got to put them up and quit hunting them. And, you know, just like I raised a litter of puppies 4 years ago, and the reason I bred her, I was going to keep a puppy. And then when the puppies got here, I thought, man, I'm too old to be training a pup. Some young man needs these dogs. So I just got sold them all. And so, you know, and I even thought about last fall or here recently about getting me another black puppy. And I thought, man, I don't need a pup. You know, so, and I started to call a guy in Tennessee a couple of months ago now and speak for one of those pups. And then I thought, man, you know, I don't need a pup. I just need what I got right now. So, I guess that's what I'm now. I'm got too old to be training pups. I used to love to do that, but I guess you just have to realize where you're at and what stage of life you're in, and don't worry about nothing else. Just try to take care of what you got.
You can't worry about it, but I've always felt if I had a young dog that I could not let that dog go to waste. I could not just, you know, let him languish in the kennel or as it is down here in the house. And I would not really advise anybody unless you live in the country and your home is wide open. You don't have, you know, you're not worried about having nice things in the house and all that stuff. I wouldn't advise trying to raise a coonhound pup inside. I mean, it can be done. We've done it here. We have what's called a Florida room, which is an enclosed lanai or patio, whatever you want to call it. And the windows open and all that. And, you know, the dog spends most of the time there. And then I take him outside and he gets to run around out there and all. But dogs, pups, they like to chew. You got to be on top of them all the time that they're not chewing up something that's going to make, you know, mama upset.
Well, puppies is going to chew on the leg of the couch or the chair or something. They're going to chew on something.
Yeah, I've got
to stay in the house.
I'm right now, I'm trying right now through a company that does that specialty work like that to get just one of these legs on the bottom of a sofa, you know, the short leg where he decided out of the blue that that was his chew toy. And he's going to chew on that, you know. I thought about it. I might have. It's a turned thing. It's like it's been turned on a lathe or whatever. I thought about my buddy Johnny Brinkley up here in Tallahassee. He does a lot of work with the lathe like that. So maybe he'll make me a leg for that. So for right now,
I'm
going to
tell you, Johnny Brinkley, you don't come no better than Johnny Brinkley now. I'm going to tell you that. He's a good guy.
Well,
really, him and Sequoia.
There again, there again, back to that thing of the people we meet as we were talking about Chirpy. And of course, Laquita and Johnny knew, you know, Chirpy very well. And you know, they're just salt of the earth people. They really are. And I worry, I won't say worry, but I think about young people today, if they're not making friends and relationships and all, and get to know people and, you know, and sit around and tell stories and all that, you know, what are the young people today going to do? They're going to talk about what they saw fly by on a screen in front of them. I mean, you know, those times that I spent, David McKee and me, and part of the time with Lee Currens and Lee's boy, Lenny, and different ones that came to Johnny's every year that we had the Winter Classic in Albany, Georgia, we would go to Johnny's 2 or 3 days early, and we'd stay mm-hmm. and hunt. And the best times, you know, David McKee and I talk about this a lot, are we're sitting around Johnny's table, either at night when we came in from hunting, having a piece of Laquita's coconut cake, or in the morning at breakfast, having our coffee, and sitting around and talking and sharing and telling stories and laughing and all of that. That, in my life, would have been a whole lot less pleasurable and enjoyable had I not been able to do those things, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Same thing when we go to White River, you know, sitting around talking to the guys and listening to their stories. And it's, if you're missing out on
part of it, you know, yeah. part of it is the way I look at it, you know?
Yeah. If you're missing out on the fellowship aspect of coon hunting, that's you're right. missing the best part. I'll just
Well,
say
we've
that.
Got a good group that's going, and I'm looking forward to going again this year. And
we've got some of the best fellows that you could ever think about. You know, everybody's considerate to one another. It's been put together over time and largely by you, and it's it works, you know. And I'm the one that's probably the highest strung of the whole bunch, and so I have to keep a damper on that sometimes. But that's the way it is in a culture, in a camp, a hunting camp. I learned that when I was a kid. You know, you learn what the pecking order is, and you learn all. But anyway, just a great experience, and I just wonder if you know, I see these younger fellows, and man, the money out there that they can win is phenomenal. I just saw where Michael Ward there won $100,000 in the hunt.
Oh yeah,
my buddy Randy Smith is a partner with John Strickland and Ashley Oxidine and Doug Galbraith with that little Ann female. They split with Nikki Hale for second and third place and still took home $32,000 apiece, you know. So that's just crazy, the money that can be won and all. But I just wonder how much fellowship really enters into the games for those people, because I know, you know, they're running back and forth across the country hitting these bigger hunts because that's where the money is. But I just hope they are. I really do.
I do too, but I don't, that's a rich man's game. You can't, guy like me can't do that. You know, if I was a young man today, I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You've got to have resources to play at that level. There's no question about that. You got to have a good dog.
Trey tries to play that game, and he does. Trey's got a good dog.
Yeah.
Trey, talking about Trey, Jamie and Trey Perry, and they go to Arkansas with us every year. But, Trey's got a good dog.
Oh, yeah.
I don't care how good a dog you got, you're not going to win every time you go.
No, you have to have the breaks, that's for sure.
You got to have breaks.
You know, the elements of that, to me, if I were to break it down, is number one, you've got to have resources to get a good dog.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you want to take time out and train the dog till he's up 2 or 3 years old and then take him, well, you know, you can't do that. You got to always have something in the pipeline, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And you got to have a good dog, and you got to have the financial backing to hit the road, vehicle, gas, motel, all of the above. Entry fees are crazy. You know, entry fees of $5,000, $6,500, this kind of thing. And if you make the final four or final three and you get in there, then yeah, you can cover your investment. But the average guy working 40 hours a week can't do that. We know that. And that's not, from my standpoint, a criticism of guys that can. God bless them. You know, I've never been jealous or envious of wealthy people. because I said, man,
I'm just always proud of them.
Absolutely, that you're able to accomplish that.
I tell folks now, I'm not rich and I'm not poor.
That's right.
I got enough to live on. I got some coming in every month, got a little in the bank. But, you know, I have to watch what I spend.
That's right. We're at that point in life, you know. And I always wondered, Jimmy Phillips, who was a field rep with me at AKC, a great guy. Most people know Jimmy from down around the Albany, Georgia area. He always said, he used to tickle Lindell Price. He said, I'm on a fixed income, Price. I can't do that, you know, at all. But when you get older, you find that out. You know, you can't just run out here and make money like you used to. You could work a shutdown or something like that at the plant or whatever, make some extra money and put aside and buy a dog that you wanted to buy or something like that, you know. But now, you know, what you get each month is what you get. And if you made plans for retirement, then, you know, you'll do all right. You know, if you've invested in a home and you've got that and your vehicles and stuff like that. But it changes. All of life changes for you when you retire.
That's right.
But it's been good for me. You know, I retired, I think I was 60. I was 65 or soon to be 65. And I'm 78 now. So I've been retired about 13 years. And I haven't had to call Meals on Wheels yet or anything, but nothing would be wrong with that, I guess, if I needed it. But
that's right.
Yeah. Things will change.
Well, I worked till I turned 65 in February, and I worked till that June after February, and then I retired. And I retired in 06. So, man, I'm soon to be retired 20 years or more.
Next year will be 20 years for you. Yep.
It will, next year.
Well, it was 06 that I had that fatal night. Well, not fatal, thank God, but that night in North Carolina when I was having a heart attack and had to have double bypass surgery. And I remember after I had the surgery and reading all the stuff, and they said, well, you probably, those grafts or bypasses will probably last you 12 years or so. Well, next year that'll be 20 years for me.
Yeah, so, that's right. Never know. Good Lord's good to us.
He is that for sure. Now, are we going to go to Automokes this year?
Yeah, we talked about that the other day. As far as,
if everything goes
along, come on by here and spend a night. We'll get up and go.
Well, that's always a fun trip, and it was kind of strange last year that, you know, I flew, of course, that's a lot easier and all that driving, but it's not near as much fun as getting to swap stories.
We're planning on going.
Yeah.
And then it won't be long after that. We'll be going to White River again and have another good week.
Well, hopefully these boys, between Mark and possibly Clayton, I'll have a dog that I can turn loose that'll go in there and tree a coon. And I can get to him at the White River most of the time if they don't get back behind bad water somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
But we got Durkee. He's still pretty big and strong.
Yeah, we got Durkee. He's still planning on going. And Durkee's got them long legs. He can get on in there and get them.
That's right, man. Delta Force.
Yeah, they're good to me.
They tell me,
let me see your lease. I'll go get your dog.
That's right. We were talking on the podcast with Kenwood Maker, you know, about remembering this Mark Elmore, Gilmore, from somebody's trying to call me. You know anybody in Sweeney, Texas?
No.
Well, somebody from Sweeney, Texas was talking.
Well, they want to tell you about Social Security, and they want to get you on the pod.
I figured they were going to tell me that I needed an extended warranty on my truck.
Yeah, they always call
me
for
that. Yeah, I could use one. I only got 286,000 miles on that truck. Wonder how long they'd extend that.
Mine's got 200-something thousand on it. I bought that truck in 06 when I retired, and that was my retirement present to myself.
Yeah.
And I thought that'd be the last truck I'll ever need. So far, it's still holding up.
Well, it's a Toyota. They run forever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's got 200-something thousand on it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I need.
Well, you know.
I just need a truck to go fishing and go hunting when I want to.
Yeah. Well, I've got a cousin that lives down here. He's my second cousin. And I'm proud of him. He went to college. He was in the Air Force at MacDill here in Tampa, and he got out. He went to University of South Florida. And anyway, he got two or three degrees in law enforcement. And he was, I believe, the second in command in the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department for several years. I think he went through the FBI Academy and all that stuff. He's a smart guy. Grew up across the street from me. But he's one of these guys, his mom would say, my mother would say, he won't let a gnat light on his vehicle. I mean, if you see him, it's showroom clean whenever you see him. Well, I used to be a little that way. I used to do a lot of rubbing, a lot of waxing, a lot of detailing on my vehicles. Not anymore. I got a membership down here in a car wash, and I run through there every once in a while just because I've got the membership. But that's
we got one of those too. Who would have thought that years ago?
Yeah, really.
And you know what? My stepson, Becky's oldest boy, he lives in Atlanta, or right outside of Atlanta. And they got a place over there where you can take your dogs and wash them. And he said, it's $18 to wash a dog. I said, who's going to give $18 to wash a dog?
That's right. Well, up where my brother lived, my brother's moved to Florida. He's down here within a couple miles of me now. We've had a good time. Ella made dinner here night before last, and he was over and all. But up in that little town that he lived in up there, they had in a car wash, they had a dog wash.
Yeah.
You could take your dog in there, had a big old aluminum sink, you know, you could put your dog in and wash him all down, and then you could dry him off. And but
my dog's up behind the house in the pen, and if it get washed, it's because that's a rain
on rain. That's right. Take them to the creek. Let them get in the creek. Well, Norman, I ask you to join me today on the phone, and I appreciate you doing that. And I did want to help the people out there understand that you've been recognized by your association. And I think that's a real honor, especially in the way that they do it with the Black and Tan Association. It's not an automatic thing. You have to be voted on, and that's
great.
Well,
I appreciate it. You know, I thank Mike and Frog for heading that up and putting my name in the pod anyway.
Well, yeah. Well, the old song, I Get By, I think it was Janis Joplin sing, I Get By With a Little Help From My Friends.
Yeah.
That's and right. That's that. It takes friends.
Well, you make friends through the years, and a lot of them are friends, and a lot of them are acquaintances. But you know, I got several friends that you know that I think a lot of, and I respect them. And if they needed me, all they got to do is call, and I'd be headed that way.
Well, that's for sure. And Nubbin, you definitely should have no regrets for your involvement in our sport, because I was awfully proud to have you as a field rep all those years, and I know you were there even after I left UKC and went to PKC. So, anyway, we're looking forward to Autumn Oaks coming up. It'll be here before we know it. This is in about the middle of May, and it's going to be, you know, the first or last weekend in August, 1st of September, we'll be on the way to Richmond, Indiana. Well, folks, we're going to wrap this one up for today. I want to thank my friends at W Hunting Supply for their sponsorship that makes this podcast possible, for Alpha Dog Nutrition, supplements for your dog, everything you need really to keep your dog in top shape and top health. Always my good friend Mark Zepp with Zepp Predator Calls, always been a strong supporter of ours. I will tell you that I do have copies of Gone to the Dogs, A Coon Hunter's Journey. It's a book I wrote about my journey with these coon hounds back over the years. People that buy the book say they really enjoy it, and I hope you will. You can pick up a copy by going to stevefielderbooks.com. Okay, from my good buddy Arnold Nubbin Moore, this is Steve Fielder saying we'll see you at Autumn Oaks.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.